Welcome to Trep Talks. My name is Sushant. I am an e-commerce entrepreneur, and each week we bring an inspiring entrepreneur or business person from e-commerce, retail, or tech industries to help you discover how to start and grow your own e-commerce business. Thanks for spending some time with me today, and let's get started. Hey there, entrepreneurs. My name is Sushant and welcome to Trep Talks. This is the show where I interview successful e-commerce entrepreneurs, business executives, and thought leaders, and ask them questions about their business story and also dive deep into some of the strategies and tactics that they have used to start and grow their businesses. And today I'm really excited to welcome Tyson Walters to the show. Tyson is the CEO and founder of Shed Defender. Shed Defender is a versatile onesie that contains pet dog hair, and dander, reduces anxiety, and can replace the medical cone for dogs with hot spots, skin conditions, allergies, surgical sites, and more. They carry 9 different sizes, so they can accommodate dogs from 4 pounds to 130 pounds plus sizes. And today I want to ask Tyson a few questions about his startup story and some of the strategies and tactics that he has used to start and grow his business. So thank you so much for your time today, Tyson, and for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
So I know that you got the idea for your product and you started because of a personal need. So could you share a little bit about your startup story? How did you get the idea for this product? And what is your startup story?
Yeah, so that's a pretty common question. And most people who know me and have seen my St. Bernard, they understand why I created it. I got Harley probably 11. Yeah, she's 11 now. Didn't realize how much dogs actually shed, or actually her breed at least. And then within, the first year, her hair was just getting everywhere. There's just not a whole lot you can do. I mean, you can brush them every day, you can bathe them, do all that stuff. But I mean, there's always just excessive shedding. And it was something, I could deal with, but it was like it got in my car, my house, and I brought her everywhere too. Mm-hmm. So friends and family were complaining about the hair. I'd have to leave her outside or not bring her, or my roommates were getting very upset about it. So I got tired of other people complaining about her hair being everywhere. So, I looked on the market and tried to find other products, that could fix the solution or be the solution, other than just, a brush and bathing. And there was absolutely nothing out there, that would work. So, I came up with the idea in 2011, I believe. And I just moved home from college. So I had my mom start sewing the first prototype of just a dog suit onesie that would just contain the dog's hair, and wear it for situational use in the house, the car, other people's houses and stuff like that. So for me, it was a no brainer, but yeah, a lot of people are curious why I want to wrap my dog in a onesie.
So this is more of a dog problem, or like can it be applied to like a cat or something, other animals also?
I created it for the aspects of just dogs, but I mean we've had people use it for their cats, but we're working on creating a design specifically for them because their shape and their back legs kind of move differently. But with our new sport version, it's open underneath, because our original version now it zips from the chest down to the butt of the tail. Okay. So it covers everything. So you have to unzip for potty breaks. But our new sport version stops at the belly, so the dogs can go to the bathroom at any point in time. So we have a lot of people using it for their cats. They do shed quite a bit. And then for, post-surgery use, a lot of cats lick themselves, hot spots. So they use it for that too. So dogs and cats, but dogs primarily.
Yeah, and one of the questions that I had in my mind when I was browsing your website, when I looked at the sizing, it's like, when people are buying it online, is there like a mismatch? I know the sizing on your site is based on like the different pound or the weight of the animal. Is it like, do you get a lot of returns where people buy it and they say, okay, it did not fit,
a problem? And that's the hard part with dog clothes is there's so many different shapes and sizes of dogs. They're not like us where, it's pretty standard. You can get away with, 4 or 5 sizes, but we have 9 right now. And honestly, I'd love to make more, but the more sizes you get, the more confusion. So we do deal with a lot of exchanges. Some people just don't look at the size, the weight, the sizing chart. Mm. Some people think, oh, I have a small size dog, so they get a small, but it's a 10-pound Chihuahua, and they need the extra, extra small. So we deal a lot with that, and that's, you know, just something you got to be okay with and kind of work into your price, knowing how many exchanges and returns you're going to do as well. So it's all part of the business.
Now, one thing that you mentioned is that you got the idea for this right out of your college, you know, when you, it started in 2011, but I think it didn't really become like a serious business until a much later. Can you share a little bit of what were those first years like? Was it just that you were not getting a lot of sales, so you were not sure that this product will actually make a business?
Yeah, so it took a long time from conception to completion. You know, it took several years. I had my mom start selling, you know, the first prototypes, and we went through a bunch of different fabrics. We went through just plain netting, which obviously didn't work, to cotton, which, you know, ended up just being too hot. And then, you know, once we had kind of a working prototype, I had to grade all the sizes too. So at that point, you know, within the first year, I kind of finalized the design for the most part. And I had a seamstress I found off Craigslist, actually. Mm. So she was working on it, but I was also working. I did construction and had other couple side businesses just to hustle and make money to pay my seamstress to get this done. So it was just a lot of trial and error and finding fabric and tweaking this and that. And, you know, I didn't have much money to work with. You know, I just bootstrapped it myself. So it took probably until 2014 to finally get something where I could like actually start selling. And that's when I started just selling online, but at a very small rate. I was selling like maybe 1 to 3 a month. It was like a $5 a month budget for advertising. Mm-hmm. So it was hard to get the word out there. And I just had one seamstress who was just making them, you know, on demand.
Okay. And I know that at a certain point, you know, while making that 3 or 4 sales per month or something, you had an exponential growth where the Dodo, which is the site that focuses on animal videos, they, I believe, wrote an article for you and the sales went off the charts. Can you share that story? What happened there and what difference it made for your business?
Yeah, that was a pivotal point in the business and, you know, personally my life as well. So I was actually right around the time where I was thinking about just tabling this idea and, you know, going to find a different career and stuff like that. So, yeah, I was selling online for like 1.5 years, you know, once again, selling a couple a month maybe. And the Dodo picked up on it and they're like, we usually don't do any articles promoting products. That's not, you know, what we do, but it's such a unique product. We'd love to write something about it. And I didn't think much of it. Cause I've had some people do that before and, you know, there's no traction, there's nothing there. But they did an article, and as soon as it hit at 8 a.m, I woke up to, you know, on Shopify, you hear that ding when you get a sale. And I was just hearing dings all day. I'm used to like 2 a month. I'm kidding. Like 100 in one day. And it just took off from there. It went viral. And next thing you know, it's just kept going. It was on the Daily Mail. And I was getting calls from New Zealand radio stations and United Kingdom. I mean, all over the world. And it just kept going and going, and BuzzFeed picked up on it. Well, that was later. But yeah, I just kept going like wildfire. Once it goes, you know, one person shares it. And then from there, yeah, I was used to having my seamstress do, you know, maybe she can make 3 or 4 a day, but with like 1,000 orders, I had to find a manufacturer. I mean, the whole business, I had to go legitimate like immediately. And I really had to give a button gear to, get things moving.
So to me, what it sounds like is that there was a market for it. People wanted something like this, but until that point, you hadn't actually found a way to actually validate your idea, I guess. Was it?
Yeah. Like, you know? So I mean, I really wasn't doing any advertising. Like I said, my budget was around $5 a month on Facebook. I didn't have much content to work with. I didn't even have you know, I wasn't ready for when it went big anyways. I was unprepared, but I didn't really have the money to get prepared anyways. So it was pretty remarkable how it happened and how fast it happened and, you know, the next steps I had to follow.
And is that now a big part of your marketing and advertising? Just like, you know, being on these kind of sites like the Dodo or the communities that are specifically for like animals and things like that, because they're the ones that are driving your sales?
I mean, ideally, it's any publicity is great and we want all we can get. We've been fortunate enough to kind of luck out and get all these, you know. From there, you know, we got BuzzFeed and that video got like 15 million views, and then Lad Bible, Unilad, you know, all those social media viral sites picked up on it. And then, you know, we got some TV appearances like Good Morning America, The View. So, I mean, those are the best because, you know, it reaches the most people. But those are just dumb luck or, you know, pay to play where you have to pay a lot of money. But we were lucky enough just because we have such a funny, unique product. People are like, what is that? But that was the hard part, actually, of advertising to begin with, was explaining what it is. People didn't understand the concept. People thought you wore it 24/7 and it was, you know, unhealthy for the dog. So it took a lot of education and explanation before people caught on and understood all the benefits, you know, what it was actually for.
So there's like two parts of this. You know, you all of a sudden went from like three or four products to like, you know, thousands and thousands of products. And the other side is the supply side, where you only had one seamstress who can create like three or four of these, you know, at a time. So can you share a little bit about your manufacturing, going from that seamstress to what process you had to follow from there and where you are right now?
Yeah, so I was prepared. I had some contacts in mind just in case something like this happened, but I didn't know how quick it was going to happen. So my seamstress did as many as she could for, you know, about 2 months. And in the meantime, I was living in Northern California. So I went to San Francisco, where there's a manufacturer there called National Apparel. And I got him working on, you know, getting the patterns, getting them digitalized. There's all this stuff that I never dealt with because my seamstress had nothing digital. She cut it out by hand. So we had to switch everything over. And so I had him do a rush. But I mean, I didn't know. I had to get labels, size labels, other labels. So zippers. I had to do all this stuff that my seamstress kind of did on behind the scenes stuff. So I had to find all that within a couple weeks. And then still took about 2 to 3 months for people to get their, most people to get their initial order. Just because, you know, you can only make so many so fast, especially on the first round of manufacturing. So luckily enough, there was no other product like it, so people couldn't go buy it elsewhere. So they waited, and they were actually happy to wait. And we didn't have too many upset customers. But yeah, it was a long wait for some of these people.
And right now, like, are you, is it still being manufactured in the U.S. or are you, did you?
We do both. So the bulk of it's in China. Okay. Found a really good manufacturer out over there, went and visited their plant and all that stuff. And then we do some domestically here down in Southern California too.
And one question, this just out of curiosity, is when you work with China and now with the new administration, Trump administration, I think they imposed like some additional tariffs and things like that. Do you see that when you get the, like, did it make an effect in your business?
Yeah, it went from a 2.8% tariff to adding, at first it was 10%, and then they upped it to 25%. So it was up, now it's 27.8%.
Wow.
On the goods. So that definitely made a dent in our profit margin, and we didn't raise prices. I didn't want to put it on the consumer. So, you know, we did find other ways to, we just order in bulk, obviously, so then we get cheaper shipping rates and this and that. So yeah, we had to definitely account for that, which is a bummer, but I personally understand the bigger picture behind it. So it is what it is.
Does your business have like a seasonality where, you know, you see like people buying more of these in winter because they think it will protect dogs from like cold weather or something like that?
So we do, we kind of have a couple different peaks, and it's been hard to tell because we've had so many spikes due to, you know, viral videos. It's kind of hit and miss, but I mean, definitely Q4 is by far our biggest. I mean, it usually accounts for, you know, probably almost 50% of sales. Just because Halloween's a big one. People love dressing up their dog. Yeah. And then between Thanksgiving and the holidays, you know, Christmas buying, people traveling with their dogs to family and friends' houses during the holidays, they like to have it. So Q4 is our big seller. And then the shedding season is a big one too. So it kind of picks up around March, April, June. Those 3 months are pretty good. March, April, May, when the dogs start shedding, and it's that heavy season and allergy season too as well.
Okay. I wanted to ask you about the channels that you're selling. It seems like you're only selling e-commerce, like your website, Amazon, and I believe one other place. Did you never pursue going retail?
We did, but, you know, it's tough on... We have some small mom and pop shops. We sell to some vet clinics, but mainly we focus on e-commerce. We really haven't been ready to go to any big box stores. You know, several reasons. One being you have to have a lot of capital to get into those stores. If they have a big purchase order, which they will, the lead time to make it and then get paid by them. I mean, you have to have that capital up front for quite a while to even get paid back. You know, back looking back, our packaging wasn't that great for retail. We didn't have that strategy in mind. So moving forward, this year was going to be our year to try and get into brick and mortar. We changed our packaging, retail friendly, got the prices down a little bit, and then COVID hit, and that completely ruined that whole strategy. So we kind of put that on halt, and we're still trying to, and we also created some new products too. We wanted to offer our whole line of products instead of just one. You know, that helps retail stores. You know, we could get some displays and shippers with all our products. We created, you know, the sport version, and then we got some new products as well that I can explain later. So next year we're going to try and do that, but for now, if anything, we're trying to get into, I'm starting to sell on Amazon Europe, Amazon Canada, Amazon Australia, and kind of expanding those online marketplaces for now.
By the way, did COVID help your business or hurt it?
You know, it slowed down quite a bit, you know, when it first started. When the first shutdown happened, I think people were worried about, you know, work, money, paying bills, stuff like that. But then April, it actually picked up a little bit. So we were lucky enough to where I think people were inside with their dogs all the time and spent more time with them. So April and May were decent months considering the circumstances. So I guess it was pretty neutral. It didn't hurt, us too bad. So I'm happy with the results. You know, we didn't tank or anything like that.
Okay. Working with Amazon, you know, when you have like additional costs with the tariffs and things like that, and I know that when you sell on Amazon has its own, you know, high fees and things like that, whatever service that you use, do you find that it's still worth it for you in terms of like making profits and things like that, because the volume of orders that you get from Amazon is so high?
Oh yeah, I mean, really, they take 15% of each sale, but you know, if you compare it, you know, on our site we usually give out discounts and things like that, and then we also, you know, we're paying for shipping. So after you factor in all those, Amazon shipping is cheaper. They pay for return shipping, so our exchanges, returns, you know, we don't have to worry about that. Other, and then, you know, there's no discounts, people pay full price on Amazon. So in the end, it's not that bad of a comparison, and you know, to be on the biggest marketplace in the world is a must for us. I mean, it accounts for probably 65% of all our sales.
Okay. And all your fulfillment is through Amazon FBA, or do you do some of your own also?
You know, on our site, we have a fulfillment center, 3PL, and then we use Amazon FBA for the Amazon marketplace.
Okay. So why not use FBA for everything if it is less expensive?
A few reasons. I don't want all my product in the hands of Amazon. Okay. I can't ship to Chewy through them, Chewy.com. Okay. They don't do business orders, business to business. You know, they don't do a few things. I looked into it a couple times and it just wasn't the right move. You know, I don't want them having complete control over your product. You never know what can happen with them. They change a policy or something. And, you know, to get your product out, they're still backed up right now.
Yeah.
I don't know, you order stuff on Amazon, it never shows up on time right now. I've had stuff I sent in May and it still hasn't been transferred into their fulfillment centers. So it's not something I want to put all my eggs in one basket.
Marketing and advertising, could you share a little bit about you know, what works really well for you in terms of, you know, acquiring new customers or, you know, building better relationships with existing customers and so on?
Yeah, so, you know, our main advertising effort goes into Instagram and Facebook ads. You know, I personally believe it's the easiest, quickest, and cheapest way to get in front of the most people. It's pretty easy to find, you know, the right customers through, you know, some click funnels. So we have a marketing agency that helps us out. And so between Instagram, Facebook, we do some Google ads as well. A lot of traffic flows through Google, which is great. And then we just do sponsored ads on Amazon as well. And, you know, right now we've done other things too. We've done some, you know, we do some giveaways. We've done some influencer stuff, which it's really costly. And I don't think what we did was really worth it. We did one where we gifted celebrities. It's pretty expensive. But, you know, we had a couple things where we had Ben Affleck using my leash and his new girlfriend. And the problem is, like, it's out there in all the tabloids. We see it. We're like, oh, my gosh, that's so cool. There's pictures where you can even see our logo on it. But I can't use it because they have to sign off on it. They can sue me. So it's like, oh, that's really cool to brag about, but I can't use that in any form of advertisement. So it's, and, you know, or else they got it and they're like, hey, this is a cool product. I'm going to post it on my Instagram. That's what we hope for. And that never happened. So same thing with Emily Radzikowski or what her name is. Great pictures of her using it. She uses it all the time, but I'm not capitalizing on it. So, you know, that kind of backfired on us a little bit. So you got to, I mean, or else you want to pay like $100,000 and get Kourtney Kardashian to do it. You know, you got to put a lot of money into that.
Interesting. And your social media, I guess from on the advertising side, you're doing the ads, but your general social media, you're using it as like a engagement tool, or do you see that a lot of people come directly like organic traffic also through social media?
We do both. I mean, quite a bit. So yeah, a lot of people use it kind of an awareness thing. You know, we post quite a bit to get people engaged and looking and hopefully, you know, get people to try and share. Growing our Instagram is something we try and focus on. It's always difficult. Always trying to get user generated content and stuff like that. So that's one of our big focus and key points.
Okay. What does your team look like right now?
So at this moment, there is actually just three of us. It's me. Yeah, I founded it. And then my sister-in-law does VP of marketing, also many other things in the business, whatever I need help with, really. And then my mom actually does customer service. So we all work remotely right now. We've been able to handle it, you know, operate just like any other business. But I mean, you know, we're real big on customer service, customer support. We're always there to help. You know, we try and act like a big company with a small company, you know, attitude and personal, you know, touch to it. You know, eventually, probably next year, we're going to expand, hire, get an office, maybe bring shipping back in-house. But for right now, considering we're just kind of e-commerce, it's worked pretty well. You know, it's limited faculty.
I mean, one thing that seems really interesting to me is that you mentioned that you started this right out of college, and then you mentioned that, you know, you were working like construction jobs and things like that. So I was thinking, what was the point of college like if you had to start a business? What did you learn from college? Like, was the money?
I don't remember what I learned from college. I have no idea. But no, I mean, I did business management, and
so you knew that you were going, you wanted to start a business.
Yeah. Ideally, I always wanted to. I didn't know what. I always had ideas. I always liked inventing things and building things as a kid. So, I mean, I give college some credit. Just from learning a few things. I mean, you just learn a lot of, I mean, just aspects of life. You know, you learn some business stuff. A lot of the business stuff I learned, honestly, was just experience. But general, some accounting and finance and stuff like that, it definitely helped along the way. Helped with contacts. It helped with, you know, quite a bit. But like I said, most of the stuff you learn is just going to be, you know, what's in front of you once you start going in any career. I mean, a lot of it's stuff you just have to learn on your own the hard way.
So I want to ask you a few questions about Shark Tank, because I know you had a appearance on Shark Tank, and then you also you were successful in receiving funding there. Could you share a little bit what, like, when you were looking for funding, what was the reasoning for you to go on Shark Tank? Was it more that these investors would help you out in ways that, you know, a traditional funding source would not be able to help you? Was it more that you can get some advertising out of it? So could you share a little bit, like, what was the before when you went in there, what was the rationale?
Well, we actually weren't looking for funding. We were doing all right. I didn't even apply for the show. They reached out to us.
Okay.
So, I mean, I had thought about applying for a year or so, just, you know, getting the exposure. But yeah, we're lucky enough. One of the producers, which they do this a lot, they reached out to you. And I definitely wanted to do it. So, you know, they helped us do all the videos, the auditions, stuff like that. Which was nice through like the 6-month process of getting application in and getting, you know, actually on the show. But yeah, the money would have been great. But if anything, we were looking for the exposure, obviously. And then if we did team up with the Shark, we wanted more of a helping hand, a partner, a strategy partner. You know, money, yes, we always want and need. That's totally fine. We want to expand and innovate. But I want someone who could help us get to the next level, someone I could call when I needed help and kind of strategize and formalize, you know, ideas to get to the next level, not just someone who's going to give us money and then it's all on me. So that was our idea, you know, going in.
But then, so you did eventually end up getting the funding from there, right?
Well, we got a deal with Lori. Okay. We got 3 offers and I took a deal with Lori. So on TV, it looks like we got a deal, but after it aired, we both parties decided it wasn't really a good fit. You know, we didn't think our product would be good on QVC, and that's kind of her bread and butter. So we amicably, you know, decided not to go forward. But I mean, all the Sharks were nice. The show was great. You know, I have nothing bad to say. Lori was awesome. I just don't think she would have enough time for us. I don't think it was, you know, just not a good fit. So we eventually found private equity funding later. And so this year we finally teamed up with a private equity firm. And so they're really involved in the pet industry and they've helped us, you know, strategize, add new products, which is a big push for us. So it ended up working out a lot better this way.
Did you see, like, once you did the show, once it aired, did it give you a boost in sales? Does it usually help, like, airing on those kind of shows? You've been on other shows also, right?
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, that show was a big boost. The first week, you know, I mean, the first night and day, it's just, yeah, sales kind of go through the roof. And then it tapers off, you know, after a week or two. you know, it's back to normal. you always think, like, I always thought, oh man, I'm going to be on that show. I'll be rich and famous. You know, being naive as a business owner is never a good idea, but you know, you got to dream and believe. So yeah, people forget, you know, you only last for so long. But then it re-airs and you see that boost sometimes. It's probably re-aired maybe like 10 times since then. So you always see periodical boosts that show up. You're like, oh, I bet it aired again. But yeah, I mean, that first week, it would be nice to have those sales consistently.
Do you, I think one of the discussion in there was, you know, they asked you, do you have like intellectual property protection, like trademarks and patents and things like that? And I think at that point on the show, you said, you know, you didn't pursue it or something along those lines. So mm-hmm. My question is, you know, given that this is such a unique product, are you, do you now have intellectual property rights? Like, what is the process of doing that? What are the pros and cons? And do you worry, like, your product getting copied?
Yeah, we'd always worried about it. We worried about it before we went on the show. The problem with the patent is it took me so long to create the product, and I was selling. There's limitations. There's time limitations on it. So once you bring a market or a product to market and advertise that it's for sale, which I had done, you have a year to file a patent. And at that time, I did not have the money. You know, you're talking thousands of dollars. And I didn't really know about the year, you know, time limit. So, you know, it had expired. So at that point, you forfeit, you know, the opportunity for it. But, you know, in the end, so many patents are easy to get around. If you have it, someone's going to knock you off in China anyways. You know, I have one friend who I met on Shark Tank, and they've spent a couple hundred thousand dollars fighting knockoffs with lawyers and attorney fees when they might have been better off spending that money developing products and going, you know, other ways. So, you know, our new products, we have a couple patents going forward. But, you know, we have a head start, several year head start. We have a great product. We have special fabric that we use that's just incredible. You can tell the difference between us. And there's a couple knockoffs you see on Amazon that are super cheap. It almost helps us go buy those and they rip in a second and then they go buy our product. So, yeah, you're always going to worry about that, and it's always going to happen. But, you know, for the most part, we haven't had too many issues. We have a pretty good customer base that's loyal. You know, our name is finally becoming, I mean, it's not huge by any means, but it's becoming aware of people like, oh, I've seen that, I've heard of that. So, you know, they're going to want to buy at least the top tier product. So far that's been working. We'll see what happens.
One more question about Shark Tank. So when you appear on television, so this is television, how do you, and when you're doing a pitch like Shark Tank where you have to be like very short and concise in what you're saying, what kind of preparation goes into it? Like, how do you prepare for it? Do you just like stand in front of the mirror and do the pitch like 100 times and make sure that, you know, it's like automatic?
Now I don't. It's been a while since I've done one, but for Shark Tank, you know, it was a big deal. It's probably the most nerve-wracking time of my life. And we practiced, I mean, for months. We even hired my sister-in-law, you know, who works for me. She is very detail-oriented and a perfectionist. And so we even hired a media trainer. And, you know, my brother was on the show with me, so we'd have our friends sit down and pretend they're the sharks, and we'd walk out and rehearse things and go through questions. I mean, it's just preparation after preparation after preparation. I mean, we're over-prepared, which is great, which is one of the reasons I think we did well. Yeah, you just got to hammer it down. And the 30-second pitch is like, that was the most thing I was nervous about, because you want to get that right. You come out there, and that's the main thing. You got 30 seconds to shoot that pitch, and hopefully it goes well. So that's just something me and my brother worked on way too many times, but it paid off.
Okay. Finally, I know in every business there's, you know, the entrepreneurial journey, there's always, you know, you make mistakes, there's challenges. Can you share one or two challenges or the biggest mistakes that you made building your business, and what was the experience? What were the learnings? What can other people learn from it?
Yeah, I made a lot of mistakes. And, you know, a lot of them I don't necessarily regret, because I made them at a a time where they weren't big enough to ruin me. And I didn't lose too much money and stuff like that. But I mean, one time when I first manufactured overseas, I did half a batch in China and half a batch in Guatemala, and China nailed it. And then Guatemala they screwed me over big time. I got 5,000 defective pieces. I mean, I lost a lot of money and it was devastating. And it sucks because you can't sue them. You can't do anything because they're not registered here. There's no jurisdiction there. It's partly my fault. You know, I met with the guys, I got samples, I did everything, but I didn't do enough due diligence, you know, to go through more of their references and stuff like that. You live and you learn, but it's only 5,000 pieces. You know, now I order, 20,000 pieces or more at a time. So it could have been worse. Other than that, I mean, just know your finances and know your numbers. You know, a lot of times you can look at your QuickBooks and you can fool yourself, but, you know, really know what your product costs, know what it takes to make that sale, cost per acquisition. Knowing your numbers is key. You know, for a while I thought I was doing well, and then you break it down, you're like, oh God, I'm barely breaking even or planning ahead. So the numbers and finance part, I hate it, but it's one of the most important things you can do.
So the experience with the Guatemala, is that the same thing with China? Also, let's say that your Chinese manufacturer, for whatever reason, creates a bad batch of products. So you have to test it before it ships out, or how do you make sure?
No, I mean, for China, I went over there. I went to the manufacturer. I went to the plant, flew into Hong Kong and met them. I talked to several of their references, Americans who do business over there, and they're very reputable. So that went well. The Guatemala, I only reached out to a couple of their references. They didn't have any big names, like the other company did, big businesses. The other guys, they just do small batches with them. They were just shady people, everything was great. And they just gave me faulty zippers to the wrong fabric. They were late. It was just bad all around.
So what is next for your business? Are you coming up with new products? Where do you see it in the next 2 to 5 years?
Yeah, so we have a lot of new products. So we just launched several months ago our bungee leash. It's a three-handle leash, which is great. So you can, have one handle at the end, one handle in the middle, and then one handle very close to their neck. So complete traffic control instead of wrapping it around your hand. You always have a handle to choke up on. And then also it's a bungee leash, so it stretches from 4 feet to 7 feet. Mm. So there's no jerk or pull. Also, it's short enough so it doesn't drag on the ground and the dog's leg can get tangled up in it. But then it can stretch the 7 feet so that they can kind of roam around a little bit if need be. I have another leash that is in the prototype stage. That would be a big one. That one, has patents working on. And then we just launched we have two shampoos and a conditioner. One's a de-shedding shampoo and one's a sensitive skin shampoo. And then we're going to launch some soft chew supplements as well. So all our products, minus Alicia's, kind of focus on the dog's health with shedding, skin and coat, anxiety, sensitive skin and stuff like that. So we're going to have a whole line of products, that we can hopefully move forward, maybe get into the brick and mortar and go from there, and have a couple other innovative products like the leashes and some other things that I want to do. But ideally we want to get the brand name out there, expand, maybe sell. We'll see where it goes. That's a discussion we'll have in a couple of years with us and our private equity people and see where it takes us. But so far it's looking good. Every year growth as well, doing well, and pretty happy with where we're at now.
So at this point, when you are launching this new product, is it like, do you test it? Do you say, okay, you have some prototype of it and try to sell it to existing customers, or you do a landing page and say, do a pre-sale kind of a thing to know that there would be a demand for this product, just as a as a insurance policy, or how do you, or is it just like, you know, you build it and then you test it out?
It depends. For the leash, you know, our bungee leash, you know, I had this idea and I had my manufacturer in China make it, and I fell in love with it. And people would always be like, oh my God, I need one of those. And I handed it out to some of my friends and everybody loved it. And there's no three handle bungee leash on the market. So, you know, I didn't pre-sale or do anything like that. I knew there was room for it. I knew it was a great product. So I just went for it. Sales are great, selling them all over the place. And then like, say our sport version, the new version of our product, people wanted an open underneath so the dog didn't have to unzip to go to the bathroom. So that was just straight from customer's mouth that, you know, we fixed that issue. And then the shampoos we just made, and we're just going with it. Mm. You know, it's a low cost item. It was a low minimum order quantity. It fits in our portfolio of skin and coat and de-shedding. It's a perfect add-on. So on our side, it'll go well. You know, it can be an add-on tool. Hey, you know, buy this shedding shampoo. You know, it goes along with the Shed Defender, stuff like that. So that was easy. And then the soft chew supplement as well. You know, we have a calming one, a sensitive skin, like an allergy one, and then a de-shedding skin and coat one. So once again, it goes with the rest of our products, we can upsell. And the soft chew supplements, like, one of the fastest growing sectors in the pet industry right now. And we already have a pretty good Amazon presence. So we think we can kind of parlay that into that. And same thing, it's one of those items where it's not too risky to start out. It's not revolutionary. You don't have to do that much advertising. You know, we already have the platforms with Chewy and Amazon on our site, so we're not starting from scratch.
Okay. So now we're going to move on to our rapid fire round. And the idea here is that I'll ask you a few questions and you have to answer them in one or two words or one or two sentences. So the first question is, do you have any book recommendations for entrepreneurs or business people in 2020, and why?
You know, I used to love this book. Now I don't really care for it too much, but The 4-Hour Work Week. Okay. It got me motivated to work from home and think outside the box and do things on my own. So, you know, I could recommend that book. It's okay, but that was probably 8 years ago, so it's not my favorite anymore. But it is a good book. It's
a good title, but I think, you know, as entrepreneurs, 4 hours per week is not enough usually.
It's not realistic, and Tim Ferriss even apologized after he made that book. He made another one, so I'd recommend his second book.
Okay. An innovative product or idea in the current e-commerce, retail, or tech landscape that you're excited about?
I mean, this kind of goes along with Elon Musk stuff. I love space. I love the rocket technology. Everything Elon Musk does, I'm infatuated with all that stuff.
Elon Musk is an alien. He's a productivity tool or software that you would recommend?
You know, for my business, I feel like reviews are everything. We use a company called Yotpo. It's one of the bigger ones, and it's a review system. I would highly recommend that.
Startup or business in e-commerce, retail, or tech that you think is doing great things right now?
You know, I do not know. Nothing comes to mind at the moment.
Okay. A peer entrepreneur or business person who inspires you?
You know, that's got to be Elon Musk again. I love what he does. He's great.
And finally, the best business advice that you have ever received or you would give to other entrepreneurs?
You know, don't be naive. You have to understand you got to put in the work. Nothing happens overnight. When it does, it just makes things even more difficult. So put in the work, reward will be later. And yeah, don't be naive. You're not going to get rich overnight.
Thank you so much. Those were all the questions that I had. Now is your opportunity. If you want to share anything about your website, places people can go and buy your products, please go ahead.
Yeah, so you can find us at sheddefender.com and also on Amazon and Chewy. And then hopefully next year you might see us in brick and mortar stores. But I'd recommend go to our site. We always have discounts. We do free shipping, free exchanges. It's a great product. You guys should check it out.
Thank you so much, Tyson, for joining us today and sharing your startup story and also about your business and some of the strategies and tactics that you've used to start and grow your business. It's really inspiring. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.